Welcome in to the newest episode of the Hoth Hangout Podcast. Glad to have you here with us, joining us for episode 113 of the podcast and our fourth of these four mini podcast episodes we've been doing recently, covering each week the episodes of Andor, all three episodes released every week. We were fortunate enough to watch the 10th, 11th, and 12th, the final three episodes of season two of the entire show, really, just last night. Gosh, Joey and I were sitting right here about 10 hours ago watching the end of episode 12. And we're excited to kind of recap and review our thoughts and feelings about those final three episodes and really the show as a whole. And how's it going, Joey? How you feeling about, now that you've had a night to sleep on Andor, how you feeling about it?
I'm real, real sad that it's over because it was such a good show, so well written. I'm finally able to like watch everything about Andor, anything on YouTube, all the interviews, everything. I didn't want to get spoiled by anything, so now I could finally lift this embargo and really, really get back in touch with all the fans and how they thought about it as well.
Yeah, yeah. This morning I watched. I think I watched like four different like recaps, reviews, just of like people's thoughts and feelings about the show, and I have to say, like, it kind of was this moment of like, wow, other people are also liking this as much as we are. We said yesterday, kind of after we finished episode 12, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this is certainly not an exaggeration to say it's the most well-written Star Wars show. And depending on what you like from your Star Wars, I would personally say that it's my favorite Star Wars show now. Which, you know, again, going back 2.5, 3 years from now, if you would have told me Andor is going to be your favorite show over Mandalorian, mm-hmm. Ahsoka, you know, at the time we're like, oh, The Acolyte's going to be awesome.
Right.
I would have been like, there's no way. But here we are. And it was such a fun time getting to watch these last three episodes. What do you think about this? It's pretty rare that over the course of a season, the episodes are slowly seemingly getting better. Not that episodes 1, 2, and 3 of season 2 were bad by any means, but it didn't feel like the stakes were super high. It felt like the stories were a little bit scattered, and it like slowly brought it all together. And the Gorman set of episodes was just really impactful as well. And then episodes 10, 11, and 12, 10 and 12 in particular, were really awesome. When we think about the characters that make this show what it is there one that stands out, maybe one or two that stand out to you as particular favorites?
They're the obvious ones. There's the Luthans, obviously Cassian, Bix as well. But I think what really speaks to how great this show is where they took the character of Karn. I still can't believe they were able to pull that off. And with such good writing, and the way he was like this sniveling, kind of weird, creepy type of character, ends up being like kind of this, I mean, still has those features, don't get me wrong, but he's able to actually have an important role in what had happened in the show. I really could not, by the end of season one, I think you and I were both like, "What? Why is this guy here? What, you know, is this supposed to be just comic relief? Or, you know, what exactly is this character going to end up doing?" But to see where he ended up, to see where Dedra ended up, really came together. So as much as I love, you know, Bix and Cassian, I think it has to be shown how important like writing can be to a show and how great it can be if you're able to take a character like Karn from where he started to where he ended.
Yeah, and kind of the flip side of his story is his girlfriend or, you know, partner's, Miro's story, that here you have these two people who are kind of an odd pairing. You realize at the beginning of this season, oh, they're like a thing, they're a couple. And then you see slowly how Karn has this very idealistic vision of what he wants and thinks the Empire should be. Like, we're here to bring peace and order, and really to, through that peace and order, be able to help people. And it kind of is a moment of recognition on the Gorman trilogy when he has kind of the wool over his eyes and it's revealed. He's like, wow, we're slaughtering these people.
Right.
And then that's the moment where he's almost like a pseudo-rebel. And then Miro kind of goes the opposite direction, like withholding information from from Karn, sneaking, being a scavenger, kind of. She self-proclaims herself to be in the, I think it's episode 11, when Krennic is interrogating her. And you just see, like, the degradation of this character. And the irony is that she lives at the end in this prison. And really, like, the fulfillment of what this character thinks is valuable. And the irony is that he doesn't live through the series.
Right.
And so they're two particularly really interesting characters about this show. What did you think about the decision to have Miro just sitting in a prison cell at the end of the show? And that's like the end of her story there.
I think it's smart because it gives the audience the opportunity to either write their own stories about her, what's going to end up with her, or, and this is probably more likely, what's going to happen with this character going forward, because that means she's alive. We could even talk about Bix. We won't like maybe go into exactly what I'm talking about, but with Bix as well, we know that she survives. And so there are these great characters in this show that we know aren't in Rogue One. To my knowledge, we don't really see in any other Star Wars. So it gives the opportunity for Star Wars to create these stories going forward for them. So I think that's the idea of what it is, of what they're doing. If they come through with it at the end of it, if there's a book or if there's a comic or something like that, I can't imagine like them producing a full like limited series on Bix, unfortunately. But you know, if there's something that comes out with these characters, I think it would be a big win.
Yeah. Well, and while we're speaking kind of about Miro, I want to mention that part of what we want to move into here, kind of more towards the second half of the podcast, will be sort of comparing her story to Cassian's story. But before we go, I guess, any more into that, let's just like briefly go through these three episodes that we just watched before we kind of wrap up our thoughts on the show as a whole. A hot take, I think episode 10, not only was it my favorite episode of Andor, I'm almost, and again, it's fresh, so I don't want to overreact too much. I'm almost willing to say that this was my favorite episode of Star Wars TV. And now, granted, it's not like a, look, here's Luke Skywalker.
Right.
And it's not, look, here's Ezra. We finally found him. And there's these, you know, the story with the father, the son, and the daughter on whatever that alternate universe is in Ahsoka that's somehow already escaped my memory's name. You know, it's not a big flashy show, and that's not, I think that's why I love it so much.
Right.
It's episode 10 is the reason why Andor works, is because it's about human beings. It's about making decisions that suck to make because you believe in something, really. And it's again, it's not flashy. And point being, this is an entire episode, really, about three characters, if you want to include Miro in there as well. But really, this is the story of Kleya and Luthen in episode 10. And you get a backstory with it, too, something I definitely didn't see coming, but I thought was really beautifully done. And the scene in the hospital, which when we were watching, I was like, this is just like an Assassin's Creed.
Right.
Like, he's got to sneak past everyone, kind of take people out silently, gets to Luthen. And just the heartbreaking moment at the end of, like, the meaningfulness that she ascribes to that relationship, knowing that what he would want maybe in that scenario is to undo those tubes just like she did for him in that moment, I should say. So, I mean, hot take, episode 10, I think, is the best episode of this show. There's lots of great ones. I think episode 10 was my favorite, and maybe the best episode of Star Wars television. Is that too much of a hot take, Joey?
No, I think that's an appropriate take. I mean, we always have to think about, you know, how much Star Wars shows are out there right now. So there isn't like a huge amount. I mean, there's Mandalorian, there's Ahsoka, there's Skeleton Crew, there's Acolyte, there's Andor, and I'm sure Boba Fett, Kenobi. So, you know, in that pool of episodes that we could talk about, I mean, it's hard to, you know, if you even put this in the top five, I would be, that's something that's appropriate to me. You know what I mean? Because of all the things that you said. Now, what other people think, okay, maybe they do think it's a hot take. I think this is more of a warm take. You know, like I'm not not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that you're right. I mean, personally, episode 10, yeah, I think is the best of the series. With me, it's Luke Skywalker. Like, it's hard to, like, you know, for me to mentally just put it above it, you know. So, warm take. I mean, even if it's top two, that would make sense to me. You know what I mean? So, for me to be like, all right, this is better than that, I don't know. Give me a little bit to maybe say that. But for writing's purposes and kind of what we said before, we even said it at the end of the episode yesterday, or the reaction was, you didn't need those big names to come into this series. You didn't need the Emperor. You didn't need, you know, people like even like Hera or something, or Palpatine. Oh, I guess I said Palpatine, but you know, someone like Krennic, I think, was a perfect like person to put into the series and not make it like, this is kind of like you're really trying to make this Star Wars. You know, they made just a great story in the Star Wars universe, and they wrote that. That formula this entire time, where it's not going to be like, this looks familiar, Ezra, and you know, it's like all the things that you said. It was just a good story with great characters, great writing, great acting, and for all that reason, this is why this is a great show, because you didn't need all of that. You didn't need lightsabers all over the place. You still needed to have the intrigue. You needed the espionage and all that stuff, but you didn't need those characters to carry through this series. And like you said, if you would have told me 2-3 years ago that this was going to be like my favorite, because I will go on record in saying that this is my favorite Star Wars show now, but you know, because of the entirety of the thing, and I always, you know, things like, I don't know if you've ever seen The Good Place. Have you ever seen The Good Place?
A couple episodes, yeah.
So that's a top five show for me, like, of all time. I think the reason why, it was only 4 seasons, right? So there isn't the opportunity to, like, something like Lost, you know, where you're just like, this is just going on and could be going on forever. And you kind of lose, you dilute it a little bit when you start doing that. With this being only 2 seasons... I think it gave it the opportunity to be everything it needed to be in the time that it was meant to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, too. I mean, Game of Thrones comes to mind. Last season was really bad. The Office, you can make the case. The last two seasons are nowhere near as good as the rest of the show. And so I think it knows what it is. It knows it's not this, like, super flashy thing. So it takes advantage of the limited story space that it's working with. And it makes you care about the characters. It really makes impactful stories. And then the show's over and you're like, wow, it all feels more meaningful because of how you know Rogue One ends.
Right.
You're like, this sacrifice is huge. It's incredible. Well, and moving kind of more towards into the episode 11 timeline and not spending too much time there, because it felt in some ways kind of like a linchpin between episodes 10 and 12, while still being a pretty good episode. It was kind of this, Willman is the one who gets the information on his little radio. And so he and, Cassian and their buddy whose name is escaping me.
Melsk? Is that his name?
Melsky?
Melsky? Yeah.
Melsky? And he and their buddy are off. Let's see. I have it right here. Melshi.
Melshi. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He and Melshi and K2SO, which it's such a fun little inclusion to put K2SO in at the end of this show, go off and they have to rescue Kleya from the old safe house on Coruscant. And it's really like the Imperial intelligence being gathered based off of kind of limited stuff they have, because Luthen destroyed the thing with the
comms,
in episode 10. And then converging on the safe house And man, I mean, I don't know if we want to stay too much more on episode 11, but the beginning of episode 12, I was like, oh my gosh. the scene with K2SO where he's, you know, walking down the hallway and just taking out the Imperials one by one.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. As you put it in our episode notes, K2SO doing K2SO things.
Right. Yeah, and I think what we saw in... I think of what we've seen in Rogue One, what we've seen in this show, it's a little bit more graphic, a little bit more real. You know, I think about, like, the Gorman massacre, where when they brought those KX units out, I mean, they were picking up people and just chucking them, you know?
Yeah.
And just throwing them around. And that's kind of like that droid's persona. That's what they do. That's why I said K2 doing K2 things. So to kind of see it in such a close-up scale, you know, you just see them just throwing these Imperials there. Which, again, I don't understand why those guys didn't have helmets. Maybe somebody can tell me exactly why. Probably could have helped out with a concussion, not sure. But just to see it up close like that, it was pretty cool, pretty crazy. But then, you know, eventually, you know, they are able to escape.
Yeah. The scene where he's holding up
Hirt.
And the other, like, you know, macho looking.
Yeah. 7 foot Imperial. The 7 foot Imperial.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he wasn't wearing a helmet. He was too tall. It's just like, well, I gotta destroy this droid. So I'm just going to shoot through him. And K2SO is literally using his body as a shield. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So many things in this show.
Yeah, yeah.
Where in what other Star Wars show are you going to get that? Literally none.
Right, yeah.
It kind of actually had some parallels, ironically, to the final scene in Rogue One where Darth Vader's marching down the hallway.
Yeah.
On Princess Leia's ship and, you know, taking the rebel soldiers out one by one. So just like a really fun scene. Fun, I guess, is a word you could use for it. And then the way that the episode wraps up, I appreciated that they showed kind of the conflict that can still exist amongst people who have good in mind, in their hearts, with their cause. Like, you've got Luthen, who was doing things his own way, and clearly, you know, Bail and the rest of the now Rebel Alliance leaders were not fond of at all. You've got Mon Mothma, who's kind of somewhere in the middle of, like, mm-hmm. like, I know Luthen was doing lots of good things, and I want to be here as a part of this newly formed Rebel Alliance, and what are our roles in this, and how are we going to lead these people, and how are we going to fight the Empire? And then you have people like Saw, who are like,
right.
I'm just gonna destroy everything Imperial. Right, yeah. And
I'm going to take everything of theirs.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have this sort of spectrum of what it means to be a rebel, part of the rebellion. I don't even think Saw, maybe, I don't know if he would say he's part of the rebellion or not, but kind of the spectrum of what it means to fight back against tyranny. Do you take the hard stance like Saw? Do you take the espionage position of Luthen? Or do you take kind of the diplomatic position of a lot of these people at the council or the, you know, the room on Yavin 4 at the end of episode 12? But one person I did want to ask you specifically about who's in those meetings is Bail Organa, because as many people have pointed out, he's played by a different actor, Benjamin Bratt in Andor, than Jimmy Smits, who previously portrayed him in the prequel trilogy. And in Kenobi, too, no? Did he?
Mm-hmm. He was in Kenobi, yes, that's right.
Yes, so that kind of felt interesting. I wonder if just contract deals or whatever, how that works, but... what did you think of Benjamin Bratt's portrayal of Bail Organa?
I was fine with it. I think his role was written interestingly. We mentioned in the reaction that he seems, you know, he's kind of being put in a bad light, where he's kind of against a lot of what, you know, Luthen had to say, or, you know, Luthen's discovery, essentially. And kind of seeing that was really, I don't know, it felt a little bit off of what the character would do normally. I picture him consulting with Mon a little bit more, having a little bit more of a collaborative type of discussion, and not having such a hard stance against someone like Luthen. I mean, I feel like Bail would have been a little bit more understanding, maybe listen a little bit more. But he was very much on the side of, like, oh, no, you know, that was Luthen. He doesn't know what, you know, what's going on. He's a little crazy. He doesn't know, you know. So I think that, I think for what he was given, Benjamin Bratt, I think he did just fine. But I just think the character was a little off.
Yeah. I think that's partially influenced too by where we see Bail Organa at the end of Revenge of the Sith. Like he's the one with Yoda mm-hmm. and Obi-Wan, like trying to make the Jedi Order survive, mm-hmm. trying to make the Republic survive. So he does kind of have that, there's an essence about his character that he's one of the good guys. And so when he pushes back against Cassian's stance of like, Luthen sacrificed more than any of you,
right.
It is kind of a little jarring to hear him say, or take a stance that's not like in agreement or in alignment with what Cassian is saying.
Right. And I mean, obviously we live in the future, so we know exactly what, you know, that he is right. So it's kind of hard to make that assessment because we know that, okay, the Death Star is an actual thing. But to see him being one of the ones that are against that information, it was just a little shocking.
Yeah, yeah. But like you said, I think he did a pretty good job with the role, and I appreciated his portrayal of the character. One of the last things I wanted to mention that I kind of alluded to earlier before we sort of wrap up and talking about where everyone is at the end of the show is kind of Dedra and Cassian's parallels. It sort of felt like at the beginning of the season we were going to be going more so with Cassian and Mon Mothma as the two main characters. And you could even make the case that Cassian doesn't really feel like the main character in this show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a show where the title is named after one person, it doesn't go out of its way to make you think, oh, like, we're only going to, like, focus on his story.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't even in episode 10,
right.
for goodness sake. So I think where you meet Cassian and Dedra, they're, like, Cassian just wants to be a nobody, like, doesn't want to be a part, wants to do his own thing. Like, he's kind of a bad guy when you meet him, really. Yeah. And Dedra is, like, willing to do whatever it takes to make her name known and really becomes obsessed with finding Axis. And by the end of the story, you have someone who has given all of himself to a cause, something bigger than himself, made the ultimate sacrifice, partially not by his choice with Bix leaving, of giving up family and really for the sake of something greater, for the sake of something, again, much larger than himself. And you find Miro on the other end of things being this broken person in a prison cell who is
right.
Given everything to, like, finding Axis, making this her mission, wanting this recognition for it, like just wanting it so badly to the point where when it happens and it doesn't go the way she wants and it gets screwed up, it breaks her. And really, I think the first time you see that is right after at the end of the interrogation scene in episode 11 with Krennic. I think Miro is such a fascinating character because, to be honest, I did not care about her character in season one. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. And by the end of season two, you're like, wow, what a downfall.
Yeah.
Like, just brokenness. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah, the writing is all, it has to do everything with the writing and how they gave us like a roller coaster ride for her role. You and I think always knew that she would stay on the side of the Empire. I never questioned that. I think it was always Karn that may have, you know, especially at the beginning of the season when he was starting to work with some of the rebels on Gorman. But to see kind of what happens to her, because you want the bad guys, you want bad things to happen to the bad guys, right? So essentially that you kind of get that, you know, you get that at the end of the series where, okay, yeah, she's in prison now and now she's with the Empire, something that she completely believes in. But still is not able to kind of achieve her goal. And that's kind of what you want from your villains, right? You want them to not succeed in what they want to do. Where on the other hand, as your heroes, you do want them to understand, go through that hero's journey with some trials and tribulations and to finally figure out who they are and what they mean and, you know, the bigger picture and everything that you said. But the weird thing is we know what happens to him in the next episode of the show of, you know, we know what happens in Rogue One now, and to see that, and this, we could probably just go right into, you know, where everyone's at the end of Andor, just to see like what yeah. he has, you know, gone through, and, you know, And one thing that I did want to mention real quick about Cassian, you know, obviously he's going over to a planet. I can't remember the planet to meet up with a contact. I think his name was Tivik. That is where we pick him up at Rogue One. Tivik is the one that tips him off to tell him that there is an Imperial pilot that is defected. And in the beginning of Rogue One, because I forget exactly why, but essentially stormtroopers are coming after them. That character Tivik only has one arm; he can't like climb out. So then, what does Cassian do? He kills him. So that's a little bit of a stretch from where we see him now at the end of Episode 12 to Rogue One. So that's one thing I did want to mention. I'm like, I don't see him doing that. Obviously, we saw Luthen do that at the beginning of episode 10, when he met up with the double agent. But I don't know. So I just wanted to mention that. But yeah, that's where Cassian is now.
Yeah, the scene with Cassian at the beginning of Rogue One does resemble Luthen and Young.
Yeah, Young.
I think was his name at the beginning of episode 10, where it's like, give me the vital information and then I'm going to do away with you for the cause of the rebellion. I mean, that's one of those polarizing moments where you're like, where you feel not sure how to feel about Luthen as a character or Cassian as a character in Rogue One, frankly. By the way, name of the planet, I think, was Kafreen.
Kafreen, yes, thank you.
Where he's going to meet Tivik. So, yeah, just at the end of the show, you know, like you said, Cassian is meeting with Tivik. Mon Mothma, Bail, and Clea are all on Yavin. Dedra, as we've mentioned, is in the Imperial prison. Saw is still over on Jedha. We know about his role in Rogue One. Luthen and Partagast, as you've noted in our podcast notes, are one with the Force now. both interestingly, I don't know, someone might be able to correct me on this. I think, and I'll be careful with the way I say this here for the YouTube algorithm, I think this is the only two instances, at least I'm trying to think of anything else that could fit in this category, of people in Star Wars shows doing away with themselves. For very different reasons, but ultimately neither of them make it to the end of the series, and the scene with Partagast was very what's the parallel I want to make, gosh, I don't know if I can say this on YouTube either, but a certain leader during World War II when he locked himself in his bunker and just kind of had his ending that way. Mm-hmm. That would, when it was happening with Partagast, I was like, oh wow, that kind of has some ties into that in some way. But and then you alluded to Bix earlier being on Mineral, but the big really cool reveal in the last 60 seconds. By the way, if you haven't watched the episodes yet, this is about to be not like a massive spoiler, but it'll be a surprise to you if you see it. So having said that, here it is. Cassian and Bix's child in Bix's arms at the end of the episode. Such a cool moment. Such a special moment. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's where we really leave all the characters at the end of the show. And really quickly, we wanted to go over IMDb has these episodes, 10, 11, and 12, 10 as a 9.6, 11 as a 9.5. Mm-hmm. I think that may be just like a touch high, but I think 11 is still really good. And episode 12 is a 9.7. By the way, not even the highest episode grade of this show. Episode 8 was a 9.8.
Wow.
The Gorman episode where all the craziness went down. Episode 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 are all ranked 9.5 or higher. Only two episodes in this show received lower than an 8.2 on IMDb. Mm-hmm. And even those episodes were 7.9 and 7.5, respectively. So, just really a fantastic conclusion to season 2. If you were grading these three episodes, how would you grade them?
I mean, if we're going by the IMDb numbers, I probably would have given episode 10 a higher rating than 12. You know, I would have I enjoyed that story a little bit more. 12 felt like, okay, everybody, like, you know, at the end of high school when like all your buddies, you're like all hanging out like, "Hey, let's get one big hug, one last hug." At graduation, and like, you know, we'll go to the party at, you know, you know, Jim Williams's house, and we're just gonna have a good old time. You know, like I feel like that's what episode 12 was. It was a good wrap up for what everything. But episode 10, I think, was the strongest one. So I would give like, you know, if I'm going with IMDb scores, I'd probably go like 9. I would switch. I would say 9.7 for 10. I would give 9.6 for 12. I'd probably drop 11 to like a 9.3 or something like that. But still, all solid. In this last arc, I mean, definitely the most entertaining, the most meaningful arc of these this last season, and yeah, just sad to see it go. What are your thoughts on the grades?
Do you want me to give IMDb grades, or do you want me to give like half and whole points?
You can do half and whole points. Let's do that.
I honestly got to go 10 on episode 10.
Oh, okay.
I got to stick to my guns. If I could go 9.5, but. And to be fair, I think I'm going to go 10 on episode 12.
Oh, too. I love it.
And I like 10 slightly more, but I also loved 12.
Mm-hmm,
11,
mm-hmm.
I would probably just give like a flat 9.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm doing just the flat scores, probably nice. It would be 10, 9, 10.
Yeah.
But again, to echo what you said, amongst all four of like the trilogies of episodes that we got in this season, this was my favorite. But granted, the other ones were really... really well done as well. So stepping away from Andor, it's going to be a while before we get another Star Wars show. I think the only one on the schedule for the rest of the year, at least at this moment in time, is Visions Season 3, and that's not until October.
Yeah.
What are your final concluding thoughts if it is our last opportunity to watch a new Star Wars show for like 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
What are your concluding thoughts about Andor as a whole show?
They raised the bar. I mean, they absolutely raised the bar in shows, in Star Wars. Not even just Star Wars, but just kind of entertainment in general. Just what it means to have such a meaningful storyline, how you write characters, how you develop them. And honestly, in 2 seasons, they did this all in 2 seasons. So you don't need to have these, you know, 4, 5, 8 season series when 2 is enough. So I think... that is what we need to take away from this. Is this the formula? Is this what makes a good story? You know, maybe we don't get to see I would have loved to seen a lot of this in the movie theaters, but do you not need the huge movie budgets in order to do so? Actually, the budgets were probably about the same as a movie, but you know, just the, you know, I think they've revolutionized what we expect now from a Star Wars story. Now, is that good? Is that bad? I guess we'll find out. But the fact that we're able to get here at this moment and say, now that was a good story. Now that was something I very much enjoyed. And honestly, I kind of expect that going forward. If that's a bad call, it's possible. But I think that we're here now. This is what we saw. This is what they gave us. And I was just very excited. And I'm very happy to have gone through this.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sides to a standard being set. One is that it exists now, and you expect everything else to meet that same standard. And the downside is that you might be more likely for products to not meet the standard.
Right.
And so I hope it's more of the former and less of the latter there. But regardless, what an incredible experience of a show. I truly, truly enjoyed, especially the last 12 episodes, but really both seasons as a whole. A special and memorable experience getting to watch this together with you. Again, this is the origin of our podcast. Our very mm-hmm. first episode ever was on episodes 1, 2, and 3 of season 1 of Andor.
Probably, yeah.
And was like over 2 hours long almost, back in those good old days. So I can't wait to see what future stories that they tell now that we do have this really awesome standard of Andor and walking away from it. Lastly, again, I'm just appreciative of the experience of the humanness and the realness of this show, and that they weren't afraid to shy away from some of those more difficult things to show. And I think it made the show better for it, that it treated it just as something that was very real and raw and honest, and what it means to be really part of the Rebel Alliance. So, having said all that, it's been a good ride. We look to be back soon for another episode of the podcast, probably in about, I don't know, 2 weeks' time or so. And maybe we'll wrap up our final thoughts on Andor in that episode too. Who knows? So we appreciate each of you for listening to this episode of the podcast. As a reminder, hit that subscribe button and the like if you went on to enjoy today's video as we climb closer to that 500 subscriber goal. We appreciate each and every single one of you so very much. Hope you all enjoyed Andor just as much as we did. We will hope to catch you next time, and until then, may the Force be with you.